Hello and welcome to Talking Aussie Books, a new weekly podcast shining a spotlight on Australian fiction. My name is Claudine Tennellis. As a writer and avid reader, I love chatting about books. And in this podcast, I'll chat to authors, publishers and readers, giving you, dear listener, insight into what's hot on the Australian fiction scene. So if you're looking for your next book recommendation or just want to know more about Aussie fiction writers, this podcast is for you. Grab yourself a cuppa, sit back and enjoy. Well, listeners, what a treat I have in store for you today. For those of you with a romantic adventuring spirit, then I urge you to look no further than the latest work by my next guest author. Robin Mundy is a Tasmanian-based author of three novels whose work forms an exploration of nature in its wildest forms. Her fiction draws on inspiration from her own adventures through Svalbard, a territory of Norway, Greenway, Antarctica, the Norwegian coast and Scotland. Her latest novel, Cold Coast, published by Ultimo Press, is a completely immersive and enthralling exploration of the majesty and brutality of nature through one woman's brave journey in a world exclusively occupied by men. The more I read, the more captivated I became. It was a brilliant novel. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome Robin to the podcast today. Hi, Robin.
Hello, Claudine. Thank you so much for having me.
It is my absolute pleasure. And as I said just before we started recording, oh my, what a novel Cold Coast is. And I wanted to say congratulations on its publication. Are you excited to see it make its way out into the world?
I'm particularly excited. And one reason is that sort of in the midst of writing it, I had about a year and a half off. I was sort of busy with other work. And it was really the year of COVID where I just decided, right, I'm going to take this opportunity and finish this novel. So I'm really thrilled that I've achieved that.
As I alluded to in my introduction, in preparation for this interview, I was reading up on some of your own intrepid adventures in far-flung places. And so I wanted to ask you, which came first? Was it your preoccupation with wild places and desire to explore, or your desire to write fiction that explores the effect of wild places on human lives?
Oh, definitely the former. I mean, even as a sort of young girl, I just wanted to go to Antarctica. I was, you know, one of my Antarctic heroes was Frank Hurley, the photographer, Douglas Mawson, the Australian explorer. And I first went as a passenger on a tourist voyage to the Antarctic Peninsula. And a couple of years later, the then owner of the company asked if I'd like to come on a training trip. So that was really the start of my career working in the polar regions. And, you know, that led to trips to the Arctic and to this book.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you a little bit about the fact that you've worked seasonally as a ship-based tour guide in many of the places I've already mentioned. So was that the start of those adventures?
It was, and I worked on a very small Russian ice-strengthened ship as the bartender for a couple of years. And then, you know, as I got to kind of know the area and drive Zodiacs and so on, I moved into the role as assistant expedition leader. But I've also had another strand to that bow in that my partner, Gary, is a seabird biologist. So I've been lucky enough to winter and summer in Antarctica as his field assistant on science projects. And in fact, we spent most of the year out on the sea ice studying emperor penguins out of Mawson Station. And I would rate that as one of the best years of my life.
With all of that in mind, can you tell me about your inspiration for this book, Cold Coast? Where and how did the idea for this novel first come to you?
I started working on these ship-based tours in the Arctic in 2001, and it was maybe that first or second season that we visited. Well, we go to Svalbard, which is an archipelago of icy islands way north of Norway. The main island of that archipelago is Spitsbergen. And we visited a site in the southwest of Spitsbergen called Hornsund. And at the inner end of Hornsund, it's just so picturesque, Claudine. It's a massive mountain that's filled with breeding seabirds. And, you know, there's glaciers and icebergs rolling by. And you almost miss it, but there's this tiny, tiny wooden cabin at the base of the mountain. And when I saw it, I just thought, oh, that'd be a neat place to spend the summer. And, you know, a lot of these voyages, there's a big educational component. And we had an onboard historian. And I went to one of her lectures where she spoke about this particular cabin. And she told our passengers how this cabin was used by a Norwegian woman, Vonnie Voldstad, who was Svalbard's very first trapper and hunter in the era where Arctic fox and polar bear were commercially exploited for their fur. And so the idea of a woman trapper being the first in this male-dominated world and wondering what that experience would have been like for Vonnie, that really kind of piqued my curiosity and set me on a course of research and eventually to write the novel.
Oh, such an amazing story. So for the benefit of those listeners out there who haven't had the opportunity to read this book as I have, can you tell us a little bit more about the story?
Absolutely. Well, maybe just to explain the overall structure, part of the story is written from the human perspective, from Vonnie's perspective, and also her trapping partner, Anders Sætherdal. And another smaller part of the novel is the interleaving of quite short chapters shown from the perspective of an Arctic fox. And of course, the Arctic fox is both a hunter and hunted. And it has to navigate its very first winter in Svalbard. And it also has to navigate the trapper's quite perilous world. So the story focuses on Vonnie. It begins in her township of Tromsø in northern Norway, where she worked as the town's very first taxi driver. And this is, you know, back in 1930, which was remarkable in and of itself.
Yeah.
And she would ferry these trappers to and from the local beer hall when they returned from their season in Svalbard. And she got to hear their stories, probably a few drunken stories included, but she became absolutely inspired with these stories of Svalbard, and she wanted to experience the place for herself. The big thing in her favour is that she was a remarkable shooter. She won championships as a target shooter, and, of course, that was an essential skill when you're up in Svalbard and hunting polar bear. The foxes, by contrast, were caught using traps, but, you know, just given the danger of the terrain, you had to carry a rifle and you had to be a good shot. And so her partner, her trapping partner, Anders Sætherdal, very reluctantly agreed to take her because he needed a partner desperately. And that was how she got to start in the Arctic. And that is the focus of the novel.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. So as you mentioned, the book is set in the 1930s. It's a harsh time for women on many levels, but particularly for a widow with two children to raise. But as you said, Vonnie Voldstad was no ordinary woman. And she comes to this story, I believe, with a desire for more than what life has dealt her.
I agree. She was a young widow. You know, her husband died of Spanish influenza, and I can only imagine what a difficult time that would have been for a young woman. She was only in her 20s when her husband died, and she was left with two tiny children, you know, toddlers really. And yet she had a huge amount of get up and go because, as I mentioned, she became Tromsø's very first taxi driver with her own cab. And I think she was a woman who must have just yearned for a wilder freedom, for an ordinary woman seeking out an extraordinary experience. And I was lucky enough to get hold of a memoir that she had published back in 1956. It was published in Norwegian. It took me about 6 months to get hold of a copy through a library document delivery service, and they sourced it from a library in the USA, and then a couple more months to actually have it translated into English. But what I really got from what she wrote about her life was that she was absolutely passionate about the Arctic, you know, about the experience of this remarkable place, and really wanting it all. She was wanting it all. She was a great mother, a loving mother, but she also wanted to experience, you know, this this amazing part of life.
That's absolutely true. And you've conveyed that beautifully in the narrative of this story. But I also felt that she was straining against the bonds of societal expectations of women at the time.
I agree, Claudine. And I think she must have been quite an individual to be able to do that, because there, you know, not only, you know, was she told that the Arctic would be too hard for a woman and that she was unfit and it wasn't a woman's place, but her trapping partner, Anders, also received a huge amount of derision from fellow trappers just because he was about to invite a woman into this man's world.
Yeah.
And in a sense, she straddled both a female world and this very masculine world where, you know, she saw her job in the Arctic as looking after the hut and doing most of the cooking. She was a terrific cook and, you know, doing the washing and doing all of those kind of domestic chores that women of the day were expected to do. But at the same time, she just saw that as kind of part of the role, and she very much immersed herself into doing all of the male jobs as well, which was going out and walking for 20 kilometres a day to check fox traps and reset them, and encountering polar bears and crossing a glacier on foot in the dead of winter. And she did that with gusto. And a couple of times in her memoir, she remarks on being afraid and not wanting to kind of show that she was afraid. And so I think there are a lot of elements to her, both in terms of being a formidable woman, but also being a gentle woman.
Indeed. And I think you've captured all of those elements of her character so beautifully in this book. So the life of a trapper was difficult. It was a lonely one. And even more so, I can only imagine, for a woman separated from her children. But as you've kind of alluded to, she and Anders managed to create a comfortable life of sorts together, didn't they?
Yes, absolutely. Within all that sort of extraordinariness is an ordinariness. I mean, wherever any of us is in the world and whatever we're doing, there's a kind of domestic ritual to our lives. You know, 90% of our day is ordinary, regardless of the scenery that's, you know, all around us. And that was the case for Vonnie. You know, where so much of the day is spent just on living, and, you know, they had a wood-fired stove, so a big part of the day was collecting driftwood, because in Svalbard there are no trees, there's vegetation, but it's kind of ankle-high tundra. So they would rely on driftwood being brought in by the tides and having to, you know, wield these sometimes enormous logs and get them cut up and chopped and split and so on, without which they would have had no way of cooking or heating the hut. So a big part of living in any polar region is just dealing with melting ice and having warm water, being able to clean your clothes occasionally with melted water, looking after the dogs that were working dogs that helped them in their work, as well as these moments, you know, out in the field where you're encountering polar bear and walking through this rugged, austere setting.
Indeed, just absolutely fascinating on so many levels. But I wanted to talk about Anders for a minute there. And he was a remarkable kind of man himself. I mean, to take on somebody that he had no measure of in the beginning, really, and to be living in such close proximity to somebody, and not just anybody, a woman with her own sensibilities and, you know, need for privacy and all of those things. And to teach her everything that he knew, essentially, because she wasn't like any other trapper. She came sort of almost like a blank canvas apart from her ability to shoot. So it kind of made me feel like, you know, as much as Vonnie was special, he was also special.
I absolutely agree. And I really hold Anders in high esteem. And not that he wasn't a product of his time, because initially he deeply regretted taking her, and he became fearful that she'd be you know, a kind of a stone around his neck. He'd have to keep her alive. She wouldn't be able to do the work. And she had to spend a long time proving herself to him. And he was an unyielding taskmaster in that he gave her no kind of leeway. She had to, if she got into trouble, she had to get herself out of trouble. You know, their days were often spent apart, both checking traps in different areas. Mm-hmm. And yes, he was willing to teach her, but at the same time, he was also aware that he was taking an enormous risk by allowing a woman to be his working partner. And I think in that way, he was a man ahead of his time. And his praise was very scant. Yeah. But when he did praise Vonnie, she knew it was the real thing. And a kind of, you could just see her blossoming with these kind of moments of, yes, you know, you've done okay kind of thing from Anders. And by the end of their first year, he developed a deep regard and respect for Vonnie and her skills.
Something that you've spoken about already and you touch on quite a great deal in this book is the fur trade. The pelts of the animals trapped by Vonnie and Anders was something that Vonnie herself was not entirely comfortable with, even though it was to be her ticket to financial independence. And in fact, later we see that the business of being a trapper was no longer viewed through the same lens as it once was. Something that Vonnie says at the end of the book in the face of a protester of sorts, she will not apologise for the living she sought, the living she earned. Now, we in Australia have had to face many of those same challenges to industries of bygone eras, whaling being one notable one. Those industries formed part of the fabric of our society. It populated our towns and drove the economy. Is it wrong to look back in judgment on those activities, knowing what we know now, do you think?
I think it's a provocative question and a really valuable question to address because, you know, here I am. I'm a guide in the Antarctic and the Arctic. I'm a rifle bearer in the Arctic because we can't take passengers ashore without the safety of rifles, just in case a polar bear suddenly appears. I mean, it would be the worst day of your life to have to shoot a polar bear. And I'm not a trapper or a hunter, and have no aspiration to be so. But I knew when I tackled this novel that I had to be true to a bygone 1930s mindset toward animals, toward the commercialization of fur. And I think the salient point is that I just refuse to stand in judgment of bygone values. You know, one thing I was really aware of that I admire Vonnie and Anders for and all of those trappers of that era is that they lived a very lightly trodden life. And it is easy to stand in judgment of, you know, of a lifestyle where you're exploiting animals. But at the same time, to do so, we would have to consider the footprint we leave on the earth and maybe the way future generations might reflect on our lives and our errors or, you know, or our misguided intentions. And so I made the decision that I wasn't going to stand in judgment of this bygone era and rather to be true to Vonnie, who I think really gained as much from just the experience of living in Svalbard as she did from needing to call herself a trapper.
You touched on the alternate point of view in this book and that being from the point of view of the fox, and I wanted to just chat a little bit more about that. We have Vonnie and Anders, but then we also have, as you said, the view of the Arctic fox. I think there's also one small scene from the view of a polar bear. They journey alongside the trappers throughout the year, and these scenes offer us insight into their own fight for survival throughout the changing seasons in Svalbard. So I wanted to ask you, why was it important for this story to explore these alternate points of view?
I knew from the start that I wanted to offer an alternate point of view to the human hunter, human trapper. And initially I was kind of toying with the idea of following the journey of a fox fur coat, you know, a coat that's been made in the 1930s and you know, the trajectory of its life. But in the end I just thought, oh, I love Arctic fox. It was one of my favourite experiences of going to the Arctic is to encounter little Arctic foxes, and I'll never forget actually standing beside Vonnie's hut, where there's a den with Arctic fox, and they probably come from Vonnie's time, but seeing these little fox kits just playing and romping and tussling together, you know, as playful as puppies or kittens, and just admiring the way the agility of these foxes, how they can, you know, scamper along death-defying mountain ledges in order to hunt for birds, or, you know, make their way up a near vertical slope. And in the next minute, you know, there'll be a howling gale and you'll see them snoozing with their big brush sort of curled around their snout. And I think because I love Arctic fox so much, I thought, well, why not use the real thing? And, you know, as a writer, I absolutely knew I wanted to avoid anthropomorphism. I couldn't get into sentimental territory of having the fox have feelings and thoughts as if it were a human. So instead, I've just concentrated on the actions of the fox. And so any kind of characterization or affection that a reader might feel for the fox is purely through its actions. And I knew that there would be a capacity there for Vonnie to feel affection for this fox and to feel conflicted, knowing that chances are this fox would end up in a trap. And it was also an opportunity to create tension and friction, because hopefully the reader wants the fox to survive, and yet it has to navigate this trapper's perilous world.
It was truly remarkable and something I hadn't seen before. So thank you very much for a lovely read in that respect. Robin, if there was one thing that you would like readers to take away from this novel, what would it be?
I hope I have included or inferred enough tiny little seeds to show the fragility of the Arctic. The Arctic, I mean, as we know, it's one of the most vulnerable, fragile places in terms of global warming, the recession of the ice, the vulnerability for its animals, most especially the polar bear. In Vonnie and Anders' time, they had no notion that the Arctic would ever change. And I've kind of shown that from their perspective, that they believe that the Arctic will be the same for their children and their children's children and so on. So I hope with that combination and the combination of my evocation of the landscape, that readers might be more aware of the Arctic and go away with a greater understanding of its value and its importance.
Indeed. Robin, not only have you travelled and adventured extensively throughout your life, but you've also written extensively. In addition to your books, you've published a number of short stories. You hold a PhD in writing and a Masters of English and teach creative writing at university. I mean, honestly, I'm exhausted just reading all of that out.
Oh, I'm exhausted listening to it.
But seriously, bearing all of this in mind, I wondered if you had any advice for aspiring authors out there who listen to this podcast.
Yes. Look, I'm saying that tentatively because the practical side of me is saying, you know, if you're happy to live on the poverty line, and, you know, chances are you probably will never make your fortune in writing. But I think for those who are passionate about writing or exploring their own creativity, you kind of don't have any choice. You just kind of have to go for it and see where it leads you. And my advice would be just to believe in yourself and your work and just keep going with it. If you feel that you can develop your work by, you know, enrolling in courses or in workshops and so on, then that's a marvelous thing. And I think probably one of the most valuable things as an emerging writer and even as an established writer is to maybe find two or three like-minded writers and form a writing group where, you know, you're meeting once a month or so and you're giving each other feedback on your work, because really feedback is just invaluable in terms of being able to develop and advance as a writer.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much for that. Very well said. Robin, are you working on something else at the moment? Any more adventures on the horizon, perhaps?
Well, I'm really hoping that once this kind of COVID pandemic gets itself sorted out, that I'll be able to return to the Arctic and the Antarctic. And in the interim, I've got the seed of an idea for a new novel. So it's kind of still sort of mulling around in my mind at the moment. And it seems to take me a fair bit of time to sort of, create a distance from the last story, but that's the space I'm in at the moment.
Robin, I found Cold Coast to be a remarkable story of courage and survival. Congratulations once again on its publication, and thank you so very much for joining me on Talking Aussie Books today.
Thank you, Claudine. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Well, that's a wrap, folks. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review on iTunes or drop me a line via my Instagram at Claudine Tennellis or on my webpage, claudinetennellis.com. Thanks for listening. Until next time, happy reading.